Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 134, recorded October 8th, 2012.
Greetings to all you Aquarimaxers out there.
Hello. We have an episode filled with people today.
We do.
Filled with international people today.
Both new contributors and returning contributors, we welcome you all.
Yes, we have Tony in New York, Kelsey in California, Mick in the UK, Tyson in Australia, Matt in Australia, and Jonas in Sweden.
All right, so let's start out with...
Can I just put in a little side note? I think it's cool we have somebody from Sweden today.
I do too. I think it's cool we have two Australians, someone from the UK, someone from Sweden, a Californian, and a New Yorker.
Yeah, because California and New York are kind of two different countries too.
And they're on opposite sides of the continent. So yeah. We've got all kinds of fun going on. Cosmopolitan show.
Sweden specifically because my dad's grandmother was from Sweden.
Yeah, that is cool.
So
true.
I'm something like an eighth Swedish or something like that. Someday we'll go and see it. Okay, let's go to Tony. He says, hello to all my fishy friends. Firstly, let me express my enjoyment of the continuing coverage of the Beta Breeding Project. It is fun to have a regular feature on the program to look forward to each week. Also, well done to the younger members of the Aquarimax crew. Your interviews are interesting and fun, and we'll have to pass that on to the kids.
We will.
Good to hear that members of the next generation are getting involved and enjoying one of the most rewarding hobbies on the planet, fish keeping.
Especially Gwen. All of them like fish,
so
but
cute.
Gwen's especially into
it.
It
warms my heart. We told them the story about when she was like...
8 months old.
18 months old or something.
I checked
eight months
back
old?
She was eight months old
and she caught the fish
yes.
in her bare hands.
Yeah.
I just think that's a telling story.
Yeah. She loves to vacuum out the beta tank every day. She asks, can I vacuum it
can
out?
Can I do it? Can I do
I'd
it?
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it's very cute. Okay. Tony says, here's my request for an upcoming show. Russ, would you be willing to discuss your experiences with photographing and taking video of fishes?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do it. I do not profess to be an expert by any means, but I'm sure I have a few tips that will be useful to some folks out there. So, we'll do that. I think we should probably either do a dedicated show or a show at least half dedicated to it. So I don't think we'll be able to fit it in this week, but we'll just plan on doing that soon.
Okay, maybe next week. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes, but we'll get on that soon. We also need to do a show about Mbunas because...
Did someone ask us
us to do that too. I think it was Tyson in Australia, actually.
Oh, okay.
So we just haven't gotten on that yet, but we will.
Okay.
We haven't forgotten.
I think too, it's October, we should do something on, like, ghost fish.
So if any of you like to keep ghost fish or, you know, other... nocturnal fish or something that relates
to...
Is
there anything called vampire fish or eels?
There are vampire plecos.
There you go. See? Mm-hmm. We should just do a Halloween episode. We could have vampire plecos and ghost fish and...
Yeah, there are vampire crabs too. Vampire shrimp.
Do they have any werewolf fish?
They have wolf fish.
Wolf fish? See?
There you go. Maybe
and
we ought to do
we'll
that.
We'll like rework the Aquarimax theme with the monsters theme or something. Okay. Anyways. Tony says he attached a video of his assassin snails. He says, I wanted more surface area in my 2 gallon tank, so inspired by the Principon's episode on floating islands, I added some craft mesh. So the snail decided to climb onto that floating platform for a bit of fun and snail surfing. So
we're going to show you the video of the surfing snail.
That's pretty cool.
And you can
that
play some...
That could be like a Scooby-Doo episode along with Halloween.
Play some Beach Boys music in the background as you watch it.
Oh, okay, is it on the resources page or is it on the Facebook page?
It will be on the show page.
Okay. Which one's the show page? Is that the Facebook or is that our website?
That's just the website where you get the actual, you know, the podcast goes.
We should put it up on the Facebook
page. We can
page
do that, too, if it's okay with Tony.
Okay. Oh, and he also sent us some pictures of his killifish.
Yes, and we'll put those up on the show page as well.
And he says, go Team Beta, and then in parentheses, that includes you too, Carlos.
It does.
Is that like the alternative to Team Edward and Team Jacob? It's Team Beta?
Yeah, see, there you go. It's the Beta team.
Ah.
And thanks, Tony. And I would definitely include Carlos in the team because he, you know, helped us
totally.
With his interview and with other advice that he's given us over the... you know, the course of our adventure, so...
Yeah. Absolutely.
So thanks, Tony, for sending these pictures of your killifish, and I really think it's cool that you set up the floating island based on, you know, can the Prince of Puns idea. We got some Water Garden crossover going on.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Fishy fusion.
And how often do you get to see a video of a surfing snail? I mean,
I want to see it. I haven't seen it yet.
So, you'll get to see it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go to Kelsey in California. She says, thanks for answering all my questions on the podcast. Enjoyed being a part of the show after listening since the beginning of my aquarium hobby 6 months ago. And she had questions before about her rummy
nose.
So we talked about that.
And quarantining.
Okay. She says, thanks also for covering the topic of moving with fish. In February, my husband and I are moving to Arizona. It'll be a 13-hour drive, and I'm very concerned about it. I had a couple of further questions. So, number one, if the fish are in breather bags, would putting them in a cooler to keep them in the dark and temperature regulated prevent gas exchange? If so, would an open-top container with a loose towel over it to keep the light out help? Okay, so what is she exactly meaning by that?
Okay.
With the breather bags.
Well, we talked about breather bags and how to keep your fish, you know, when you're traveling over a period of time, you keep them in the breather bag so that they get gas exchange during the whole process.
Okay.
Not like a bag that's...
You fill it up all the way to the top with water instead of leaving air in it.
Right. And they're the special bags that Cordon produces. Mm-hmm. And anyway, she's wondering if it would be better to keep them in a cooler.
With the lid shut,
or if it would be better to use an open top container and just put a loose towel over it so that there's not too much light. Because you don't want a fish to get stressed out.
They get stressed out because of the light.
They can. If light's changing a lot, they feel shadows coming over them. It's kind of like in the wild, you know, a bird or something.
I see.
So it can help them stay calm if they're in the dark when they're moving. The thing is, you can use a cooler and close it as long as you open it periodically, because there's still a lot more oxygen in the air than there is in water, you know, in general. Mm-hmm. So if you just open it periodically, fairly frequently, depending on the temperature, to just, you know, get some of that air renewed, it's okay. You can do that. It's not a big deal. But you could use an open-top container with loose towel, too. It's just, it's kind of up to you.
The cooler
will help more with temperature, maintaining temperature. Okay. So if
you're had the water warmer and you needed it to stay warmer and you're traveling...
If you're having extreme temperatures, then you'd want to use the cooler, I think. But if the temperature in your car is climate-controlled and it's pretty close to what the fish need, then you probably didn't have to worry as much. So, and you could also do sort of a middle ground where you have the cooler lid open and then just prop it open a little bit with a washcloth or something, just dry, just stuck in there, or something
just
else.
Just to make sure enough
just
air gets through.
It's cracked a little bit. Okay. You could do that, too. That would be what I would say about that.
Okay, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Number two, what's the best way to keep the most bacteria alive? Should I put the filter media in a bucket with a battery-operated airstone, or is there another way?
Well, it depends on the filter medium. If you have, like, a bio wheel, you can float it in water and then have that water, you know, be agitated by an airstone. In fact, just the wobbling around in a bucket in a car will do a lot. That will make a big difference. But keeping the bacteria bio wheel alive and happy is fairly easy if you just float them in water, because they float.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're up near the surface and they turn around periodically because they get bumped
just
about.
Just because it's getting sloshed.
Right. And so that's pretty effective. If you have something that's always underwater, it's a little bit more difficult if it doesn't float. You know, anything that floats is a little bit easier.
Do the bacteria drown? Something,
they don't drown, but the problem is they don't get enough oxygen if there's not constantly flowing renewed water, you know, coming there. And so that can be a problem. But if you keep them moist but not, you know, too, not submerged, but, you know, floating is easiest. Here's a cool idea, though, depending on what you do. I mean, if you put an airstone in with some gravel, you know, a thin layer of gravel from the surface of your tank, that can help, because you just have that thin layer so that you're not getting anaerobic layers down at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And you scoop it off the top where the aerobic bacteria are likely to be. That can help. And then you aerate it like she suggested. I think that's a good idea. And here's a suggestion from Mick in the UK, in Carnforth, UK. He said what you could do is you put them in the cooler. If you put the fish actually in the cooler instead of putting them in bags,
mm-hmm.
which I think this is a great idea. You do that. And then you have a battery-operated air pump, or you could also hook an air pump into your car if you have the right kind of, you know, some cars have hookups
like
where you can get
cigarette lighters.
You can get an inverter like we have, where you can plug things into the inverter into the cigarette lighter, and then you plug the the normal plug of the air pump into that. Anyway, and we've done things like that before. And then you use it on a box filter or sponge filter that you have already cycled in your tank. See where I'm going with that? Well, see where Mick's going with that?
Yeah.
So Before you move, you put the sponge filter or the box filter in your main tank, run it for 3 or 4 weeks so that it's
gets
full of beneficial bacteria. And then you hook it up inside your tank, and so now it's being aerated, but it's also being filtered by the sponge filter or the box filter.
In the cooler?
In the cooler, yeah. And then once you move...
I guess there's lots of different shapes of cooler. I'm thinking of our little coolers going, that would spill all over the car.
Well,
but you'd use a big cooler that's deep enough that you don't have to fill it all the way.
Right,
to the top,
you don't feel it all the way.
Around.
Yeah, you don't feel it all the way, but you use some of the tank water to fill it up,
mm-hmm.
and then it's cycled basically because you've got that pump in there. I mean, depending on your fish load and everything, that's something
it's
you
like
need
a
to consider.
Portable fish tank.
Yeah, and this is another thing: you could keep your fish in there for several weeks if you needed to while you're cycling another mm-hmm. tank.
Yeah, that's a really good
once again
idea.
Depending on bioload. But I love your idea, Mick. Thank you for putting that out.
Even on bioload, if you got, I mean, they have like really big coolers. If you just that's all you've got in your car, you got everything else in a moving van or something.
Right,
you know?
Right. So it's a great idea. I love it.
Yeah,
love it.
It's a very good idea. Okay, she has one more question.
Okay.
She says, "What about moving plants and substrate? I have some water wisteria, Java fern, bacopa, anubias, and a moss ball. Breather bags for them too. If I put the substrate in a bucket with enough water to cover, will any of the bacteria there survive?" Which you kind of just talked about.
Yeah, I kind of addressed that to some extent.
So that's good.
The stuff on the bottom won't do quite as well. I mean, well, you know, I've moved substrate like that, and it works okay. If you keep the top layer, you know, you can, mm-hmm. it's not too bad. You pour it in, and it makes a huge mess and everything, and you think it's going to go badly. But it usually doesn't as long as you make sure there are some healthy bacteria, a good number of them.
Okay, so what about the plants?
The plants? Plants are easy. As
you
long as you can get them
plants.
Across state lines, that's the main issue. But legal considerations aside, not that they should be cast aside, but just
you have
talking
to look
about
into the, your own destination's legal
right.
issues.
So find out about getting your plants from one state to the next. There may be some permits you need to get or something like that. But as far as the practical matter of moving them, they're really easy. You don't need a breather bag. You can just use a normal fish bag or even a zip bag. You know, the zip seal type bags,
like
something like
bag?
That. Yeah, you could use something like that. You don't need to put a lot of water in, or a lot of air. Most plants ship beautifully in, you know, bags for a week or more. I had plants shipped from Singapore to Hawaii to me, and they were in the mail for 2 weeks, and they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just shipped in damp newspaper. A lot of people use the damp newspaper method.
You could use damp paper towels.
And it's not soaked. It's just damp, you know, and you just kind of put them between two layers and then put that in the bag and they stay damp and they're fine. You can do it with paper towels, as you say, or you can just do it plain in the bag. Don't put a lot of air. Don't put a lot of water. Just a couple of drops of water in there is sufficient, and they stay plenty humid and happy in there.
So you could mail them to your new address and not have to worry about packing them in the car.
Right. Or you could put them all in a box in a bag with a minimum of water or air and just put rubber bands on them and keep them in the box and protect them from extremes of temperature. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly you don't want to get near freezing or above, you know, 90s, and you'll be fine. They'll do really well in general. There are a few plants that don't do terribly well. I've had poor luck with hornwort, Ceratophyllum, but just about everything else that I've shipped does perfectly well just like that. So
That's
the easy bit.
It's a good thing something's easy.
Yeah.
she also says... perhaps it's too soon to speak, but I just wanted to give an update that all my other fish have been fine and happy since Saturday.
Good. Well, let's hope that stays. We'll keep our fins crossed.
Okay, we're going to go to Tyson in Brisbane, in Australia.
Cool.
He says, "Hi, Russ and Kelly. Love your podcast. Could you talk a little about Mbuna sometime? I started in the hobby a couple of years back with a betta, then got into various saltwater fish, and now I am hooked on Mbunas. They're so active and colorful and make a great display aquarium. I have a 4-foot tank with yellow labs." He says, "One male and three female. Rusty cichlids, one male and two females. A sea? A sea? How do you say that?"
Some people say a sea. Some people say a say.
Okay. A-C-E-I. One male, two females. Cobalt blue zebras. 4, and you can't tell which are which. Aulunocara Stuart Granti.
Mm-hmm. I think some people actually say Asai too, so you get all kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
So don't
there
even
you
worry
go.
About it.
One male and two female, and a gold spot hyphen placo. All are happy with slate rock work and a sand substrate.
I'd like to see that tank. It sounds nice.
Give us some pictures.
Yeah.
So Mbunas for a dedicated podcast in the future too?
Yeah, we will do it. We might even do, and I apologize that this this didn't make it onto the podcast as early as I was hoping it would, but somehow, sometimes, you know, not everything makes it in a timely manner. So it's been a while since he requested this, but
we will do that.
Yes, maybe we'll do a show that's half photograph.
How to photograph your Mbunas. How about that?
Maybe. I don't know. But we'll get to that soon, too.
Mm-hmm. We should probably take our break now.
Okay.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Pawns and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Now.
Okay. We are now going to hear from Matt, also in Australia. He says, I quite enjoyed the vocal remix this week, many people talking at once. However, I'm hoping in future it may just be one person talking at a time. Now, was this last week the one that I missed?
Yes.
So what was the many people? Were there one, more than one of the kids on at once?
I don't think you missed all of it. You just missed part of it. I recorded.
I don't remember. That was a whole week ago.
I think you recorded the first part of it with me, and then we recorded Isaac later.
Oh, yes, that's right.
What I probably did when I was editing, I must have messed it up. So I need to go back and fix it.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry about that, but I love your attitude. That's cool.
So we'll try to unmix the vocal remix. Maybe we can re-release so you can actually tell what people were saying.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, in other news, I am fighting that annoying brush algae in my tank. I treat it by using a double dose of Flourish Excel after each water change, scraping the algae off and doing twice a week 50% water changes. Do you have any other suggestions? Sadly, I cannot get rid of all the algae by physical means as I have plants and wood that are covered in it. I can't exactly scrape it off the plants without destroying them. Do UV sterilizers help with this problem in combination with the above techniques? My tank is 120 centimeters long by 35 centimeters deep by 45 centimeters high. It has 8 clown loaches in it, 5 silver sharks, 8 adult bristle noses. I bought 2 and the rest are grown-up babies. Yay! And a stunning discus. It is kept at 26 degrees Celsius and has a canister filter.
Okay. Well,
what's 26 Celsius?
26 Celsius is somewhere close to 80. I don't know exactly. But it's somewhere close to 80. I guess I could check and see, couldn't I? I could do some conversion.
That's okay.
Yeah, we don't really need to, I guess, do it. But we do need to talk about the situation here, which is kind of a difficult situation. One issue is, look at that. It's 78.8 degrees. It's close to 80. But it's not 80, but it's close. Okay. Anyway. This is kind of a difficult situation. I think the dosing of Flourish Excel is a good idea, and it may be helping. The manual removal that you're doing is also good, especially with things like brush algae, because, as I think we've spoken before, algae of that sort can, if you let it just sit there and grow, the inner algae starts to die off, and the outer algae uses what's on the inside dying for nutrients.
Hmm.
And so
like
it can...
Like its own fertilizer.
Right, so there can be very low nutrient levels in the water.
It eats itself.
In a way, it eats its dead... ancestors or whatever.
Ew.
In a way.
See, that's good for the Halloween show.
There you go. And it is difficult to scrape off the plants. Definitely true. I am not certain about the UV sterilization. I think with suspended unicellular algae, it's very effective. Mm-hmm. If you have the right, you know, rating, the right dwell time and so on for UV sterilizer. I think it is probably of less help in this sort of situation because the algae can continue to grow from what's attached. It may help it, may prevent it from spreading from some degree through the water column, but I don't think it will.
That's probably not how it's spreading the most, though, is it? Isn't just kind of creeping along?
Right. I mean, little bits of it will go out into the water column, and any of those that get caught in the UV sterilizer may suffer, and, you know, it may damage or kill them. But I think most of the spreading is just going to happen, like you say, just from the threads of algae
maybe
that are growing.
We could call it zombie algae for this month.
It kind of is zombie algae. I remember that stuff. It made me so mad. But there are a couple of other ideas that I have that may help. Now, in a tank like that, you might be able to put a couple of Siamese algae eaters.
Do they like brush algae?
And they will sometimes eat it.
Oh.
If they don't get a whole lot of other food that they prefer, they will sometimes go after it. So that in this tank, you have kind of a semi-aggressive tank, it seems like.
So they'd be okay
not
with
the discus,
Siamese.
Though. Actually, I don't
discus
know.
Discus aren't the...
The Siamese algae and a discus, maybe not.
Yeah, but aren't discus big?
They are big, but they're not very...
The Siamese algae eater would still go after it, even if it was big?
It might. I don't know.
Sorry. I just realized I can't say that word because we have listeners in the UK. It's not a naughty word over here.
Different meaning.
I meant to say Siamese algae eaters are naughty fish.
Yes, they are naughty fish.
I'm sorry, Mick.
They can be naughty fish. They can cause problems. They can be aggressive. I think the clown loaches would be okay. The silver sharks and the bristle noses would probably be okay. I just don't know about the discus.
I think I'm blushing.
You kind of are. But, so maybe that wouldn't work so well. I don't think shrimp would work well at all in that tank with the fish you've got in there. Otherwise, I would recommend maybe a mono shrimp, because they'll eat it too, but probably not with those fish. I don't think that would work at all. How about barley straw extract?
What's that?
Maybe you need to take a look at barley straw extract.
What's that?
Barley straw.
Well,
you know, and you,
yeah.
Apparently what happens is if you use barley straw extract, it's something either chemically it makes hydrogen peroxide or it's chemically similar to hydrogen peroxide or something, and it can be an algae retardant. So
hydrogen peroxide is an algae retardant?
Yes, it is too.
But you can't just put hydrogen peroxide.
Well, you can. People do dose that way. You might want to do some research on that and see if that might be...
It doesn't hurt the fish?
Well, you have to be careful about the quantities you use and, you know, those sorts of things. But people have used it with success, hydrogen peroxide and barley straw extract. Or they put barley straw mats in the tank, like in a little
net. Like just the
net.
Actual straw?
And they put it in a mesh bag and put
it
in there.
It reaches out into the water.
And it's often used in ponds.
Would it
algae
bug other plants, or is it just algae?
I think it's pretty specific to algae.
Interesting. Where do you get barley straw extract? Would that be like a gardening store?
Well, I have seen it for sale in water garden stores, pond supply sections of pet stores and things like that. Either barley straw extract or a barley straw puck or a barley straw bag.
Oh, like a
round
cake of it?
Cake of it, yeah. Different things like that. So.
Then the fish can play hockey.
It's something to look into, and I'm not an expert in using it, but I would just say, in your case, you might want to look into it, because it sounds like you're doing some good water changes. But this tank, the size of that tank is probably around 55 gallons. Maybe not exactly, but it's pretty close to 55 gallons. And if those clown loaches are adults, or even close to adults, you know, sub-adults, and then you've got the 5 silver sharks and the 8 bristlenose, the bio load's fairly high. And with the 50% water changes twice
that's
a week,
good.
I mean, that's really good.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of nutrients in the tank. Mm. And I don't know what your lighting is or anything like that, what kind of dosing you're doing other than the doses of Flourish Excel. But there are a lot of nutrients in the tank. Otherwise, this algae wouldn't be doing as well as it is.
He said he had other plants in there too, right?
One thing you can do sometimes...
Did he say which
ones? I don't think he said which plants, but sometimes what you can do is put a floating plant that grows really fast up at the top that doesn't... compete for CO2 with the other plants in the tank because they're up on floating and so they can get atmospheric
sucking
CO2
it out of the air.
And so they can benefit from that, and they're also cutting down on the light, and you put something in there like dwarf water lettuce or something and
so just suck up a bunch of nutrients and block the light from the algae.
Yeah, act as a nutrient sponge, and it can sometimes that will help take out the algae. And then of course you have to deal with all the dwarf water lettuce, but at least it's easier to take out than duckweed. And
yeah,
It can be. I've used that before to deal with things like that. You put something
That's
in like
idea.
That, and it will often reduce the algae. And the other plants maybe won't do as well for a little while you're doing that. But then you take that out once you've dealt
and
with the
they
algae.
They come back.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully the algae doesn't.
Right. But if you give the other plants a chance by removing that all those nutrients. Those are a couple of ideas, and I hope some of those help. And just, I would say, don't use barley straw or extract or hydrogen peroxide without doing a little research and seeing how it might fit with your particular situation. But there's things that could be worth
looking
into.
Something to look into, anyways.
So, yeah, thanks,
Good
Matt.
Luck. Alrighty, let's go to Jonas in Sweden.
Okay.
He says, "Hi, Russ and Kelly. I have a small pond that I have common goldfishes in the summer. I never thought I would become so fond of goldfish, but now I think they're absolutely fantastic. I do, too. Those are still some of my favorite fish, is goldfish."
They are. Kelly has mentioned on more than one occasion that if we could only have one aquarium, she would want it to have goldfish in it.
Yes. Well, they're beautiful and they're peaceful.
Yep. I do have a soft spot for goldfish myself.
And I like what Jonas says here. He says they're like a really wet dog. They're always happy, especially when it comes to food.
True.
They are. That makes me think of that crazy video we saw on YouTube one time with those giant fancy goldfish that lady had in the tank, and she would put her hand in while she was cleaning, and they'd like play with her
come
hand
and
get
she'd them
pet
and
them
stuff,
like
yeah.
like a critter, and do this funny game where they would let her hold them, and then she'd launch them through the tank, and they'd start swimming and come back for more. It was really funny.
It was.
We should like put that up on the Facebook page sometime just for fun. Put a link to it. He says, "During the summer, a really hungry seagull paid us a visit. It successfully ate up all the females." Evil seagull. "Remaining are now two yellow common goldfish, one comet shubunkin, and some comet goldfishes, all male. Now, he's planning to get some new females, and he had an idea. He wanted to know if it's possible to mate fancy goldfish with common goldfish." He says, "I'm not so fancy, or I'm sorry, I'm sure you're plenty fancy, Jonas. I'm not so fond of fancy goldfish, but would like to get some of the black color from, for example, a black moor on the fry. How does color variation of goldfish work? My goldfish have spawned many times, both in my pond and aquarium, but the fries mostly turn out white, orange, or sarasa." What's sarasa?
Sarasa is
a goldfish color.
Usually white and orange, like a lot of the comets that they'll sell, like sarasa comets, are kind of a orange and white blotches.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I learned something new.
There you go. All right, so the first question was, can you interbreed different varieties of goldfish?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can. They're all the same species, and so everything, blackmoor, water bubble eyes, shubunkins, wakins, all those, they're all the same species.
They all interbreed.
And they can all interbreed. Now, it does depend. It's a lot harder to have a male water bubble eye and a female shubunkin, for example, because the male's not likely to be able to catch the female.
I was just going
to
say, she'll just run away. I don't know. If somebody with eyes like that tried to ask me on a date, I'd probably run away too. So.
Exactly. But if you have males that are single-tailed fish and females that are double-tailed, fancier fish, then it's more likely to be successful. Some of the fancier varieties, incidentally, are really hard to breed naturally. People actually have to strip them of the eggs and the milk, and you know, for decent success, because you can barely move. You know, some of the really, really crazy dorsalless ones with
like
big puffy eyes and things.
I think that's mean.
So, yeah, the short answer is yes, that would work. In terms of, is it feasible? There are. Yeah, it can work, but
it sounds like he's got all males left, so if he mm-hmm. wanted black, he could get some female blackmoors, and they'd be the slower fish.
He could get some female blackmoors and put them in, and you'd probably get some matings and, mm-hmm. and some eggs and so on, but the genetics of goldfish is something that's quite a bit more complicated. In general, and I'm, once again, not an expert in goldfish genetics, but I do know a few things about it. You will not, in general, if you breed goldfish, you're going to get a lot of variation in the fry, unless you have a very carefully preserved line, you know. So mm-hmm. if you just go to the pet store and get some goldfish and just say, "Oh, I have two orange goldfish here. I'm going to breed them, and I know I'll get all orange goldfish." It's not likely to happen. You're going to get quite a variety in there, and there's a lot of variation going on. And also, black is a very unstable color in goldfish.
Well, sometimes even if they are a black fish, after a while they're not a black fish anymore.
Exactly. We've had several blackmoors over the years, and our most recent one, Wendell.
Wendell the
Wet. He started out, he was very velvety black. He was about the size of, smaller than a strawberry. He was about the size of a hazelnut when we bought him, his body
it's
was.
It's hard to remember him that small.
He was quite small.
Fat after a while.
Yeah, and he got quite a bit bigger. He got bigger than a tennis ball. But he was velvety black when he started out without a trace of any other color. And by the time he passed on, years later, he was half orange, maybe?
Probably.
50% orange?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. And you'll get moors that don't go orange, but they'll get a brassy belly mm-hmm. or a whitish belly. Or
kind of a copper color.
Different things like that, yeah. So black is not a stable color, as you may have also noticed. You buy almost any goldfish with any black on it, and chances are it'll fade. There are strains of black moors that are very black and stay velvety black mm-hmm. their whole lives, but they generally tend to be really nice strains that you have to get imported or you have to get from a breeder, not just a pet store
one.
Version. But I have seen some interesting fish that may be mixes with black moors and others. Okay, well, to talk about these unusual fish that you'll find. When I was younger, I had a goldfish that was a moor. He was black in coloration. He had the telescope eyes, but he was a single tail and had a slender body, like a comet. And I really liked that fish. It was a fun fish.
That would be a cool fish.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I've seen a couple of those around, not in the stores since, mm-hmm. but I've seen them online. You know, people, once in a while you'll see a YouTube video or something with one of them in it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'll put on the show page a link to a video. And this you would really like this fish, Jonas, I think. It was a fish that did not have telescope eyes. It did not have a fat body. It was a single-tail, slender mm-hmm. fish. But it had the dark, rich, velvety
Ooh,
color.
I would like that, too.
Yeah, I bet you would. It was almost like a black molly, coloration-wise.
Like
but it was a goldfish body. It was like a shoebunken body with somewhat elongate uh-huh. finish, like a comet or a shoebunken, not like a common goldfish.
Right.
Had more flowing fins, but it was just this dark, rich, velvety black.
Now, why don't they make those on purpose?
They should. I think it would be a pretty popular variety.
I think so.
I think part of the problem is with this instability of the black color.
It just doesn't stay.
But I would love that.
That's really
I think
cool.
It's a great idea. So maybe Jonas can do it. I mean, I don't know how hard that would be to do and how many generations you'd have to play with it, or if other people have tried to do it. But I would say, look into that. Give it a try if you want to.
Send me some pictures.
Yeah, and maybe we'd have a new variety of goldfish. It would be called the Jonas Swedish goldfish or something, and it would be this a black single-tailed goldfish that's thin and flowing fins.
That would be cool.
It'd be really fun. So check out the video. I'll put the link on the page, and you can check it out. And maybe we can find out more about how that works. Okay, well.
I think that's everything.
That seems to be all for this week, as far as I can recall. As far as our bettas go, we probably ought to give a brief update.
Oh, yeah.
We pretty much transferred much of their diet, not all of it, to the dry food now, and they're eating like crazy. And, of course, their waste has reflected that. There's a lot more waste, partly because, the foods have... The proprietary foods often have a few fillers in them, and so they just excrete that.
So it's a good thing Gwen likes to vacuum the tank.
Yeah, because we have to vacuum like 30% of the water out every day. And in order to facilitate the changing of the waters in the jars, because we have a lot more jars now, we're getting close to capacity almost. We haven't quite jarred half of them, but we're close to that. I have a big bucket with a heater in it, and... keep that next to the tank and just constantly fill that so the kids can refill their betta jars with that clean water. And then, so that's been very helpful because before that it was a pain to change the water and now it's a lot easier to do. And I took another little one into work. This one that I found mm-hmm. In the tank the other day, he has a dorsal fin with a lot more rays than any of the others in the tank. And his body is stockier. So I think he might be a little bit of a throwback to the double tail genes, which are often used in Half Moon. Sometimes they'll mm-hmm. put that in because they like the extended dorsal fin that particular mutation brings with it. So he looks a little like that. So I took him into work to keep there and see what he's going to develop into. So now I have two of the fry there.
One of them we noticed too. Well, there's a couple of them that have a really dark...
The butterflies?
...color on them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which neither of the parents have.
No.
And one of them looks more of a dark, dark blue, but the other one almost looks black.
Yeah, so it would be like a black and white butterfly.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting.
And, maybe it's just because he's little. When he gets bigger, it'll look more like dark blue. I don't know, but mm-hmm. it's definitely different than any of the other babies.
Right.
Maybe he's adopted.
It's been a lot of fun to see all the different variations that come out.
He's Loki.
Maybe so.
He's adopted.
So, well, yeah, we'll try to put some pictures up of some of the things we've noticed. And I guess that's all we can do, isn't it?
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.